Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel.
Well, Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You know, summer is a travel time. Sue and I and the kids were away this past couple of weeks at the UMJC conference and then on some vacation, and others have been away. The Edelman family was in Spain. The rain in Spain, does it really fall on the plane? I suppose that's my first question to you, you know. It does fall. Okay, good. I'm glad that's been settled. Eliza Doolittle got that right. But while they were in Spain, they were so thoughtful and sent us a postcard. The postcard really becomes something of a metaphor or an example of what I'd like to talk about. This is from a community, Girona, a small community in Spain, and it's a picture of a wall with a little notch in it, and it turns out that is where the mezuzah was prior to the expulsion from Spain in 1492. And so it's been removed, and it's an image, of course, of the incredible sadness of that time, of our community being kicked out of their homes, being forced to leave the Iberian Peninsula, where we had lived for really since Roman times, and where actually under the Muslims in a previous time, we did pretty well, but for various reasons, which we won't get into, Ferdinand and Isabella decided that we couldn't live there anymore, and they kicked us out. But I wanted to point out something else to you that I have discovered, and this is from, this is very, very recent, and it is called, it says this, the Jewish Community of Spain, Federación de Comunidades Judías de España. Okay, how was that? Not bad. Pronunciation? Okay. Latest news from the community. Spanish court strikes down another city's anti-Israel resolution. For the second time in less than a year, a high court in Spain scrapped the adoption of a boycott against Israel by a municipality. And without getting into the details, you know, people have different opinions about all that stuff. But the major thing I want to point out is that we were out. We were cast out. We were completely dismissed from the life of Spain and Portugal, the Iberian Peninsula. But here, although there isn't a large Jewish community in Spain, what we do have is a government which long ago was so opposed to us to the point of actually expelling us, now is taking a very different stand. And what occurred to me is just this sense of we were cast out, but now we're back. We're back. It's that sense of coming back. It's the sense of the resolution of horrific problems sometimes, which we can't even imagine a solution, and yet it's suggestive of that. And this is true of our passages as well. When we think of our Torah portion, it is primarily a rebuke of Israel. You can't get around it. God is, in this section of the book of Deuteronomy called the historical prologue, recounting all the reasons that we had to spend 40 years wandering around instead of making a straight shot into the promised land. And so it's a tough passage. And yet, even in that passage, even in that section, we have resolution where God says, I'm going to make your city a city of righteousness. And all these bad things that have occurred are not the end of the story. All is going to be well. And of course, in the larger context of the book of Deuteronomy, there we are on the plains of Moab, looking into the promised land. And after 40 years, we could have said, or after, I should say, after 400 years of slavery, again, our motif for today, we're back. We're back. We're back ready to enter the promised land. God brought us into Egypt, where we spent a long time in trouble, but here we are. We're back. Let's think for a moment about our Haftorah portion. Now, the Haftorah portion, again, in Isaiah chapter 1, is something of a tough passage. And God is saying, listen, Jerusalem, you were destined for great things, but you have turned away from me, and very specifically turned away from in areas of social justice, caring for the disenfranchised, the people who can't care for themselves. And it says that the judges, the people who hear the cases, don't hear the cases of the poor. Why? Because they're being bribed, they're being paid off, and they don't care. And God says, well, Jerusalem, you're in trouble for that reason. But even there, there's a sense of, we'll be back. It's going to be all right. And I'll just quote one verse from our Haftorah reading today. I will restore the leaders as in days of old, your rulers as at the beginning, and afterward you will be called the city of righteousness, the faithful city. Again, there's judgment, there's tough things, and then we're back. God brings things back according to his promises. And in our Besorah portion, we can see a similar idea if we look at the larger context of Matthew 27 and then think about what happens immediately after. Matthew 27 is one of the most painful passages in the entire scriptures. Here we have the Messiah of Israel who proved who he was by doing miracles that were absolutely irrefutable, who did good for the average people, the poor people, who loved people, who spoke truth to power, who was just the kind of guy you got to love. And he was tough, but you just got to love him. And yet here he is, executed, writhing on an execution stake, to the point, this incredibly poignant moment in the account, where he cries out in the words of Psalm 22, my God, why have you forsaken me? Even he, who had a relationship with God that was beyond anything we can possibly imagine. Ours are, we strive for more, but he had an intimacy that went back for ages. And here he is, dying at the hands of his own creation, and God actually turning his back on the Messiah, all out of love for wayward humanity, as he, the quintessential expression of the sacrificial system, the animals taking the place of humans in judgment, here he, as the ultimate expression of that, gives himself for us. And even Avinu Malkeinu turned away and allowed it to happen. It had to happen that way. And no one can penetrate the depth of these mysteries, no way to explain mechanisms and all the rest, but the fact of it, pretty clear. And yet, in the midst of all of that, Matthew 27 ends. The women are at the tomb, making sure that he's buried properly according to the custom of the Iudaioi, the Judeans. And the next day, the Sunday, or after the Shabbat, I should say, he rises from the dead. Something that really happened and something that we all take great joy in. So there again, he returns and he appears before his disciples and says, and we love this, it's not from Matthew, it's from Luke, but we read it a couple of weeks ago. He appears in front of them and says, Shalom Aleichem, and they're scared. And he says, you know, you got anything to eat? I am starved. And I imagine a twinkle in his eye as he says this, and they go, yeah, here. And they hand him some broiled fish. He munches on it. Good. Doesn't fall on the floor. It's not a ghost, you know. And the resurrection. And don't get me started on evidences for the resurrection. We can talk about that another time. We don't have time. But what we have here again is this coming back, coming back to life, and initiating what ultimately will manifest in our world, the general resurrection at the end of the age, and all that happens there. And so you have in these passages these difficult things, but then we're back. We're back. His promises always make sense. They always are fulfilled. Things come back. Now, I want to narrow the focus just for a moment to one slice of coming back. And I'd like to talk with you about us, you, us, all of us. I'd like to talk for just a few minutes about the reality of the Messianic Jewish experience. Don't have time for a long history lesson, but you likely know that Yeshua and all his followers operated within the framework of Israel. They were Jews, and no one had to defend it. It was just so obvious. That was a period in history when there wasn't any one Judaism, if you will. It was a multifaceted kind of reality. We had the luxury of that because the temple stood. But within about four centuries, some people would argue seven centuries around the time of the Muslim conquest, the Messianic Jews disappeared from the scene of history. And most people thought, we are out. We are gone. We were a transition phase in God's dealing with humanity at best, but we were gone. We were forced out because we were caught between the rock and hard place of a growing Gentile community, a predominantly Gentile church who wasn't wild about Jews in the context of Roman life back then, and in the context also of a Jewish community without a temple asserting itself at our expense. And people thought Messianic Jews, or the sect of the Nazarenes as we were called back then, were gone, we're out, it's over. And of course, there'd always been individual converts to Christianity who were Jewish, but now what we have is we're back. We're really back. And I just want to encourage you this morning, in the midst of these very difficult passages, some very specific things. And so let me start with something that always grabs me. I want to tell you about our Ruach Israel board of directors. Every month we meet, and every month when it's around 10 o'clock, when we finish our meeting, Sue and I look at each other and go, wow, are we privileged to have this incredible group of people doing so much for the synagogue with excellence, with love, with honesty, truthfulness, a high priority on coming to consensus on things, nobody running the show really at the expense of anybody else, and yet at the same time proper sensibilities in terms of the rabbinic leadership and all the rest. The dynamics are so great. I have said that we could take videos of our meetings and edit them and turn them into training videos for industry. They have that degree of the kind of values that you read about in all these business books. It's really quite something. Now, it wasn't always that way. I remember around the year 2001, we had a very different situation. The major difference is now we have women on our board, and it's not just all male energy. We have male energy, we have women's energy, bringing it together. It's a radical difference. We are back big time after a time that was really not healthy at all. And it wasn't unhealthy just because it was seven guys. I think that was part of the reason for the unhealth. That wasn't the whole thing. There were other factors involved. But I just want to tell you, I want you all to be encouraged. Be encouraged. Wow, it is amazing. And it's amazing not because of only the personal dynamics and interactions and the joy of it all, but because the Messianic Jewish community in our little neck of the woods is very much on the way. Let me share some other specifics with you. This is not us as a community, but it's part of our larger community of the Union of Messianic Jewish Congregations. We were just at the conference, and I think everyone there felt that for the most part, it was a great conference. One person told me, best conference I've ever been to. It was great. But I want to tell you in part why. I want to credit Monique Brumbach, who is the new executive director of the union. She's the first woman who's led the union. And she and the president, Jesse, guy from Florida, they're phenomenal. These leaders are just awesome. I just haven't seen such great leadership of our union, perhaps ever. And I say to myself, wow, are we back under the leadership of these people. Phenomenal. I'll talk to you about a couple of other things. Two other. One, what about Camp Or Lador? Do you love it? It's phenomenal. Where else in the world has there been ever with the exception of, you don't read about it in the Bible, maybe Kepha and Yochanan had a teen camp in the first century that we don't know about. Come on, kids. Let's go to the Tiberias and play volleyball and whatever else. I don't know. If that's true, we don't read about it. But I'll tell you what is true. Wow, we got about 30 young people coming to camp, and we're going to have prayer for the team in a little while, and we go in Oneg, and I'm saying to myself, this is amazing. We are back. And thank God for the team of people. This all got started at Ruach through Sid and Diane, and then, of course, Rabbi Nathan and Raina and others. Now, Shane is very much involved. Amazing. We're back. The Messianic Jewish reality is back. I'll give you just one other quick example that really grabs me, and that is something, again, that it's a Ruach thing. And that's Ruach House. Are you familiar with Ruach House? Well, you don't know enough about it because you will find out more. Ruach House. Here's the great thing about Ruach House. Thanks to the efforts of our treasurer, Bob Krasny, we have rented a place downtown Boston where some of our Messianic Jewish 20-somethings, and we'll be inviting people from other places in the country as time goes on, they're going to be living. And the great thing about Ruach House is it combines two elements which I have never seen combined before. And I want to tell you what they are. And it's so great. The first element is the house will represent the opportunity for young people to learn the rhythms of Messianic Jewish life by living it, not just talking about it. That means Shabbat dinners, it means davening together, it means studying at MJTI, studying with each other. It's living the rhythms that we talk about, not just talking about them, and not just experiencing them on Shabbat. Wow. So let's call it the move to Jewish authenticity, but combining that with the heart for outreach. That is, we believe that we've got a message that deserves to be shared, not kept to ourselves. And the segment of the Messianic Jewish movement that we have identified with has many strengths, but I think its critical weakness is we have not been oriented toward outreach because we have been so fearful, so we have overreacted against the excesses of the Jewish missions movement that we have been utterly gun-shy to say, listen, we're here, and we want to let you know about us, and we're excited about being who we are. So the combination of this Jewish life combined with outreach, which will be centered on City Ruach, that's the name of the outreach dimension, and Ruach House, is phenomenal. And people around the country are looking at us and saying, I hope it could work, because we need a new paradigm. And these are the things that we're excited about today. So on Monday evening, we come together, I hope you'll all be there. We commemorate Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av. It is not psychologically or spiritually healthy to demand of God just being happy all the time. It is important to experience the collective sadness of our community by sitting on the floor with the ark draped in black, with the furnishings turned upside down, reading Echa, reading the Book of Lamentations, and reading the four accounts of the crucifixion and the death of Yeshua. And it's important to be able to sit in that, and we will do that. And then I want to, of course, commend to you the next day as a fast day. You don't eat food on Tuesday. But the story doesn't end there. The story ends in joy, in moving ahead. And I want all of us to feel real, real good about the ways that we are seeking to move ahead. We're not yet back completely. That's the message of the difficult readings for this Shabbat. And Tisha B'Av on Monday night at 8:30, 8 o'clock for Mariv, 8 o'clock, 8:30 for the service. But the resurrection, announcing Yeshua's I'm back, was right around the corner. And so, as we allow ourselves to enter into the sadness of the most difficult moments of our history, the destruction of the two temples and a kind of third temple, Yeshua's body, let's not lose sight of the larger picture. We are back, and he will be back. Shabbat shalom, everyone.
Oh, know your name and study your Torah for Messiah.